Thank you for visiting HawkeyeDrive.com, your stop for Iowa football, men's basketball content. I'm Brendan Stiles, and welcome to the start of a second year of the Talking Hawks podcast, exclusively on HawkeyeDrive.com. We were last with you back in December when we had our last podcast. It was right before the 2010 Insight Bowl. Iowa ended up winning that game 27-24. And then a really long offseason took place. One that lasted about 8 months. Normally, fans that have been watching this team, and even media members like myself that have been watching this team, have almost become accustomed to seeing them play in January bowl games. Then they have one in December. So add a little more time to the offseason. But now, college football is back. And in about 48 hours, the Iowa Hawkeyes opened their 2011 campaign inside Kinnick Stadium against the Tennessee Tech Golden Eagles of the Ohio Valley Conference. This is actually the second straight season Iowa's opening against a team from the OVC. Last year it was Eastern Illinois. This year it's Tennessee Tech. Tennessee Tech's coming in here with a lot of experience. 21 returning starters, as a matter of fact, including all 11 on the offensive side of the ball. And this is a team that went 5-6 in FCS play, but it sounded like they ended on a strong note. And this is a team that, when you consider the experience, they've been in this situation before. Just last year, as a matter of fact, Tennessee Tech opened its 2010 season with two road games, at Arkansas and at TCU. Arkansas went to the Sugar Bowl. TCU went undefeated and beat Wisconsin in the Rose Bowl. Those are the teams Tennessee Tech played last year from the FBS. This year, they're playing Iowa. Now, the Hawkeyes come into this game with a pretty different look from a year ago. Last year, the Hawkeyes were a pretty experienced team. This year, there's some experience. Not a whole lot, though. New quarterbacks in place. James Vandenberg did start a couple games in 2009, but he's never been the guy until now. Marcus Coker, coming off an unbelievable performance in the Insight Bowl last year against Missouri, 33 carries, 219 rushing yards, two touchdowns. He's now the featured back. Last year, he was a true freshman that broke his collarbone at the start of fall camp. And he was behind three guys that none of whom are still on the team. Look at the wide receivers. Marvin McNutt decided to come back for his senior year, which I think is big for this team because besides him and Keenan Davis, who's going to be entering his junior year, there isn't a whole lot of experience returning in that receiving core. Tight end. I lost Allen Reisner. It looks to be a pretty strong unit this season, though. You got Brad Herman coming back as a senior. CJ Fedorowicz enters his sophomore year. I think he's going to get a lot of playing time, especially early on. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if these first few games you see a lot of two tight end sets from Iowa while Brad Rogers, they wait to see whether or not he comes back into the fold as a fullback. He, as you recall, Brad Rogers, they discovered a heart condition with him right before the Insight Bowl. Kept him out of that game. It's kept him out of spring practice. Kept him out of fall camp. Hasn't been able to return yet. There's no timetable on when he's coming back. So until then, wouldn't be surprised if you see a lot of two tight end sets with Herman and Fedorowicz, or maybe even Zach Derby included in there, and you have three tight ends. And then that you mentioned those guys, and then you don't even get to the true freshman, Ray Hamilton, who looked pretty impressive in fall camp, at least from the looks that we got to see. The one strength on the offense is probably the offensive line. You had three returning starters, all of them started their respective positions last year. Riley Reiff, left tackle, probably one of the best tackles in the country. Marcus Zusevic, back for his senior year at right tackle. Then James Ferentz, last year, he established himself as a starting center, has held that position down, and now he's considered one of the top centers in the Big Ten. And there are a lot of good ones in this conference. Adam Geddes, it looks like he's finally healthy and going to be able to go for this team at right guard. The one concern at the moment's left guard with Nolan McMillan out with a sports hernia. It looks like Matt Tobin's going to get the start on Saturday. He's a junior. He's battling with Brandon Sheriff, a redshirt freshman, who it looked like was going to hold the job down until he suffered an injury in fall camp. But either way, the strength is there with the O-line, and because of that, and because of the depth at tight end, I have a feeling that Iowa's going to be running the ball quite a bit here in these first few weeks. At least until Vandenberg has established more of a rapport, not so much with McNutt or Davis, but with those other receivers that maybe haven't had the experience before. Guys like Kevontae Martin Manley, guys like Don Shumpert, guys like Steven Staggs. That's something that's going to be worth keeping an eye on. Now, you flip over to the defensive side of the ball. I believe the strength of this defense is going to be in the secondary. Sean Prater decided to come back for his senior year after he was a first-team All-Big Ten corner. Micah Hyde's back, but now instead of playing corner, they moved him over to free safety, which was occupied by Brett Greenwood the last 4 years. And that's opened the door for Greg Castillo to start at corner. And then Colin Sleeper's emerged over Jordan Bernstein, but Bernstein's a guy that is probably going to be used when Iowa plays nickel. And right now, B.J. Lowry is out with an arm injury, Ferentz confirmed on Tuesday. But when he comes back, I mean, there's depth. And then there's Tanner Miller as well. He got a little bit of playing time in the Insight Bowl last year. There's depth there in that secondary, and I think it's going to be the strength of this defense. Especially when you consider the D-line lost three starters to the NFL. Adrian Claiborne, Christian Ballard, Carl Klug all got drafted. Mike Daniels is back, and Broderick Bins is back, and they're clearly the leaders of that D-line. But everyone else is either young or has just never really had the game experience. And they're talking about playing 6, 7, 8, maybe even 9 guys up front over the course of the season. Not just Saturday, but over the course of the season. Hey, look at the linebacking core. Those guys have to stay healthy. Tyler Nielsen hurt his neck and missed the second half of the year. Bruce Davis tore his ACL in a special teams play and missed most of 2010. And as a result, James Morris ended up becoming a guy, well, him and Jeff Tarpinian both being hurt. Morris stepped in at middle linebacker, and now that's his position. And while he's definitely going to be a cornerstone of this Iowa defense, Norm Parker even said it himself. Last year, Morris made freshman mistakes. He's a young kid. Christian Kirksey's a true sophomore. He's now taking over for Jeremiah Hunter, who started 3 years at weak side linebacker. And then you factor in some of the injuries that have already been suffered this season. Dakota Getz was limited early part of fall camp. It doesn't sound like he's going to be playing anytime soon. Shane DeBona got some playing time late last season. He's out for the entire 2011 season after tearing his Achilles during fall camp. And then you have special teams. A lot of new faces on special teams now. A new punter. Eric Guthrie's coming in to replace a 4-year starter in Ryan Donahue that last year was a Ray Guy Award finalist, and now, even though he didn't get drafted, looks to be in a good position to possibly become the Detroit Lions starting punter. And I'll tell you what, there's a lot of pressure on Guthrie, not just because of that, but right now there isn't really anybody else that could be a backup. The backup at the moment, the number 2 punter at the moment, it's John Winkie, who just recently got beat out by A.J. Derby, at least for now, as the backup quarterback to James Vandenberg. Kicking competition, it looks like Meyer is still going to be the kicker, but he's been competing with Trent Mossbrucker, and Marshall Kane's a true freshman walk-on from Solon, and he's really left an impression on the coaching staff. New punt returner had been Colin Sandeman. Now it's Micah Hyde. And I'll be honest, I think Micah Hyde's going to have a big impact in the punt return. I think he's going to have a big impact. You saw last year what he was capable of, returning the lateral against Michigan State and then the pick six against Missouri. He's explosive. As long as he's able to take care of the football, he could be a force for Iowa on special teams. In a kick return game, Keenan Davis is back there returning kicks like he was last season. Now Jordan Bernstein's going to be back there with him. Be interesting to see how that plays out. And there's a new long snapper in Casey Kreider. It was Andrew Schultz the last few years. Now Kreider's stepping in. It'll be interesting to see how he holds that down. There's still a lot of questions surrounding this team. Even some of the questions have been answered, but there's still a lot of questions surrounding this team that a lot of people are looking at as a team that's under the radar. And what's really, in my opinion, a wide-open Big Ten. I mean, yes, Nebraska and Wisconsin look like the teams to beat, and I, for one, will even admit that I picked both Nebraska and Wisconsin to win their respective divisions. But let's not fool ourselves. From top to bottom, this is a pretty deep conference this year, and Iowa's going to be in the thick of it. Either way, it's going to be a very interesting 2011 season in the Big Ten, one that's probably going to end up being memorable for all parties involved, regardless of how each team fares. We have a really good lineup this week for our first podcast of the season. Susan Dank from the Burlington Hawkeye has agreed to come back with us. She was a guest last year when Iowa played host to her alma mater, Wisconsin. We had her on then. And Thomas Cohern covers Tennessee Tech for the Cookeville Herald Citizen down in Cookeville, Tennessee. That's where Tennessee Tech is located. He'll be joining us a little bit later to talk about the Golden Eagles. And we have a new twist to the Talking Hawks podcast this year. In addition to me giving you picks, my picks for the HawkeyeDrive.com Pick'em, which, by the way, if you want to participate, go to HawkeyeDrive.com. Click on the page 24 Heisman Road, or just hover over that. You'll see a page called Pick'em. Click on that. 10 games listed, including Iowa's game against Tennessee Tech on Saturday. Email your predictions to HawkeyeDrive@gmail.com. Remember to include a score with your Iowa-Tennessee Tech pick. Use that to break any tiebreakers. But here's the twist. In addition to me providing you my picks for the games this week, I'll also be joined by former Iowa defensive back Chris Rowell. In addition to giving his insight on those college football games, he'll also be shedding some insight on his time playing for Ferentz and the coaching staff here at Iowa. Just to give you a little quick background here on Chris, he was a five-year player, redshirted in 2005 when he came in. He was a defensive back, never started because, well, think about it. Think about all the players that Iowa's had in the secondary over the years. Bradley Fletcher, Mari Spavey, Charles Godfrey, Brett Greenwood, Tyler Sash, Sean Prater. Those guys were all ahead of him. But that didn't mean... But Rowell was a contributor on special teams primarily, but he contributed to this team. Matter of fact, he had a tackle in the Orange Bowl. His last game as a player was the 2010 Orange Bowl against Georgia Tech. He had a tackle in that game on special teams. And just a real quick story for you here, and maybe this is how some of you will remember him, I don't know. But a few years ago in a spring practice, actually back in 2008, this is when Jay Christensen had just started a season, and he and Ricky Stanzi were competing for the starting quarterback job. Very first play of the spring practice, 11-on-11, Jake threw a pick six. Chris was the guy who got that interception and took it back into the end zone for a touchdown. Either way, Chris is also a guy that I've gotten to know over the years. Right after his playing career, I would make radio appearances on KRUY when my good friend Jordan Loprana was still a sports director. And that's how I actually met Chris, was through Jordan. We would be on the radio together, and we kept in close contact. And now Chris has agreed to be a guest all season long on the Talking Hawks podcast to, again, share some insight on the Hawkeyes, his time as a player, and give you some thoughts on some of the big games in college football this week. So when we come back, we'll have Susan Dank and Thomas Cohern coming on to discuss this week's game, and then later, the segment with Chris. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Welcome Welcome back to the Talking Hawks podcast, exclusively on HawkeyeDrive.com. I'm Brendan Stiles, and I'm pleased to be joined once again by Susan Dank. I had her as a guest last year, and she's kind enough to join us again this week. Susan, thank you very much.
Thanks, Brendan.
And I guess just first off here, the first week of the season's finally approaching. We just got done listening to Coach Ferentz, his whole press conference. What are some of the things that you kind of took away from what he said on Tuesday that could have an impact on Saturday's game?
That could have an impact, huh? Well, they really don't know who their running backs are. You know, Marcus Coker and then Jason White, and then after that, we just have no idea. He's excited to see Vandenberg and what James is going to do at quarterback after, you know, waiting behind Ricky. They're also kind of interested to see what's going on the defensive line. You know, they have a couple of starters there, but then the rest, it's going to be, you know, 6, 7, 8 guys rotating in or out, and I think it's going to be interesting to see what they come up with there.
Well, and it's funny because everyone's been talking about James, you know, coming in for Ricky Santini. He had the 2 starts a couple years ago. Just where do you feel that he's maybe made the most strides from back then when he was filling in that game against Ohio State to now where people are looking at him as the guy?
I think a confidence level. I really think, you know, he's ready to go. He knows it's his time, and he's really embraced that. You listen to him talk, and he doesn't have the nerves. I mean, I think there obviously will be adrenaline and, you know, some nerves going in there on Saturday. But I think really he's taken over that leadership role, and he really just has that confidence that you really want your starting quarterback to have.
You were talking about Marcus Coker. How much of a role do you feel he's going to have to play, especially early in the season here, as they're getting adjusted to having newer faces on the offensive side?
Oh, that's going to be huge. If he can come back where he left off against Missouri in that inside bowl, that's going to be huge for James and for the entire offense to get those carries and to take some of that pressure off James and those receivers and Marvin McNutt, who, of course, will get a lot of attention this year.
And then the other thing you mentioned there was the defensive line, the rotations. Just how do you feel that that's going to eventually work out? I know Ferentz is saying that it's something that he envisions will be there all year long. Do you get the sense that it's something that's going to be like an ongoing issue at this team?
It never seems to be an ongoing issue. Norm and Kirk really seem to figure out what's going on. I mean, whether they have a lot of players back or no players back or no talent or lots of talent, they always seem to put the right guys in there and get that where it needs to be and figure out just those right people to go in there. So I think the first few games, you know, maybe the first half of the season, they'll do that rotation, but hopefully, you know, they'll stay away from those injuries and everything and get a solid rotation in there.
One thing that has been brought up is the fact that a couple years ago, Iowa played a team in Northern Iowa that's also FCS and won by the skin of its teeth. Now they're going up against a Tennessee Tech team that Ferentz has harped on as being a very experienced team. How do you feel that that plays just from a mental standpoint with these guys as opposed to, you know, one of those things where they want to focus on one game at a time as opposed to overlooking a team like this?
I don't know if Kirk Ferentz teams overlook opponents. I don't think he'll let them. I don't think it's going to be as tough a game as maybe he's playing it to be. Yeah, they have 20, 21 starters returning, but they also, I think the closest win they have against you know, an FBS opponent is, 21-7 in 2004. They have not won a game against them, and they have a really difficult time. So maybe the first half might be a little close, but I don't foresee that lasting the entire game.
Obviously, and I'll get you out of here on this, no one's expecting Iowa to lose this game on Saturday, but what do you feel are like the important areas that they want to at least, you know, get accomplished en route to a victory? What are some of the areas that you feel they want to focus on?
Well, I think getting that defensive line figured out, but you know, they also have questions in the secondary. You know, the offense, just figuring out what's going on there and getting James comfortable, you know, with what's going on and who he has there and getting Marcus into, you know, some kind of rhythm.
Susan Dank from the Burlington Hawkeye. Susan, thank you very much.
Appreciate it.
Welcome back to the Talking Hawks podcast, exclusively on HawkeyeDrive.com. I'm Brendan Stiles. I'm pleased to be joined now by Thomas Cohern. He covers the Tennessee Tech Golden Eagles for the Cookeville Herald Citizen down in Cookeville, Tennessee. Thomas, thank you very much for the time.
Oh, no problem.
I guess I'll just start off by asking you here what your overall assessment is of the Golden Eagles as they enter this 2007 season, and specifically their game Saturday here against Iowa.
Well, this is the deepest team Tech has had in years. For us, 3 years, it's always been, this is a young team. This is the first time that head coach Watson Brown's actually been able to say that this team has some experience coming back. I mean, with 21 starters from last year's team, this team has a lot of game experience under its belt. going into the game against Iowa, this is nothing really new to this team because they've played a lot of FBS 10th lowest division teams. I mean, last year is Arkansas and Texas Christian, and Texas Christian went on to win the Rose Bowl. So we've seen a lot of good, powerful teams over the years. So this should be really nothing new to them.
You mentioned those two games specifically last season against Arkansas, who obviously went to the Sugar Bowl last year, played Ohio State, and then TCU won in the Rose Bowl, as you said. What do you feel that those experiences in particular maybe do or did for the guys that did come, that are back for the season, as far as, you know, preparing them for what they can expect when they go to Iowa?
Right. I think the biggest thing that will help them is that they've been in facilities with huge amounts of crowds, loud volume and everything. They've seen SEC caliber players. They've seen Big 12 caliber players. Of course, in the previous games against Louisville and Auburn, and they've seen pretty much some of the biggest players they'll ever get to see. They'll never see this kind of talent on the OVC level.
And one point I wanted to ask you about in particular is the quarterback, Trey Lamb, and mainly because of the fact that Tennessee Tech, as you know, is changing its style of offense up and wants to be a little bit more of an up-tempo type of offense. How do you feel he's handled the adjustment to that from what they ran before?
During the scrimmages, he's actually handled it pretty well. I mean, it's strange how quick this offense has changed. In the scrimmages, it's been maybe 10 to 15 seconds between plays, and he's handled it pretty well. He's showed some evasiveness, and he showed some good movement in the backfield. So I think he's handled it pretty well. The question is how the opposing defenses are going to handle it, and how they're going to force him to, whether he has to throw the ball quicker than normal or anything.
Some of Iowa's struggles in recent years against teams like Northwestern that run not necessarily every 10 to 15 seconds, but run a similar type of offense, has that ever been brought up before to Coach Brown? Do you know?
Not that I know of. I remember him mentioning it on the conference call that he may not even run this tempo against Iowa. It all kind of depends on how the situation's going in the game. It wouldn't surprise me to see him start off with it, but if they get behind early, I can see them quickly abandoning it for the rest of the game.
One thing, I was on the Ohio Valley conference call on Tuesday, and one thing I heard Coach Brown mention that stood out to me is just how he described Iowa as being a really physical team and being a real strength team, and how it kind of had an influence on the team's preseason and how they went through camp. Did you notice, when, like, the time that you spent around the football team, did you notice them having more grueling practices as opposed to years past?
A little bit, and a lot of that comes with the new athletic performance center that Tech was able to get during this past offseason through playing these Division I-A games and other donors. And these guys are bigger, and they're able to do a whole lot more than they've been able to do in the past. So hopefully this building is going to come to fruition for Tech and help them be able to compete higher on the Ohio Valley Conference level and in the 1AA level. But, yeah, I mean, these guys have been doing a lot of grueling workouts during the off season. The practices have been a lot more in depth, so I think it has already started to pay advantages.
And how much do you feel that in depth? You talk about the practices being more in depth. How much do you feel that's influenced based on the fact that there is experience back and the fact that the guys pretty much know what to expect, whether it's in practice or a game or a meeting or whatnot?
That's a huge factor into it because, I mean, they've all had game experience. This depth chart, the 2D for the game, but they can still, at many positions, go 3 or 4 players back, especially up front on the line.
I'll get you out of here on this, Thomas. Obviously, I don't expect anyone to actually pick Tennessee Tech to beat Iowa, but what do you see being the keys for Tennessee Tech on Saturday to, at the very least, you know, make it an interesting game and maybe make Iowa fans sweat a little?
I think the combination of Trey Lamb's receiver, Tim Benford, who has been looked at as one of the top receivers on the football championship subdivision level, that could make some things happen. Honestly, I know as Watson said to me in an interview earlier this week, he doesn't have any expectations. Well, he expects the team to go onto the plane expecting to win the game.
Mm-hmm.
But it all depends on – but they know what they're walking into this game.
This is Thomas Cohern from the Cookeville Herald Citizen. Thomas, thank you very much. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Talking Hawks podcast, exclusively on HawkeyeDrive.com. I'm Brendan Stiles. Before Marcus Coker started on number 34, it was worn for 5 years by my next guest here, who will be with us all season long, former Iowa defensive back Chris Rowell. Chris, thanks for being a part of this, and we're looking forward to having you.
Well, I appreciate it, man. I appreciate the time and you extending your hand out to me to be a part of this.
All right. I guess the first question I want to ask you here is going back to when you played. You approach this week, the week of your first game, and you finally have spring practice out of the way, summer workouts done, fall camp is over, and you're walking down to the complex and you're meeting Coach Ferentz, you're meeting Norm Parker, you're meeting Phil Parker, who's your defensive backs coach. They're giving you a game plan for your first opponent. What's kind of going through your mind when that moment finally arrives that, hey, you're focusing on an actual team that you're playing on Saturday?
Well, usually the last couple of years, Coach Ferentz usually break down a couple games during the season and off season or whatnot, where it would be like Iowa State or UNI or a team like this, Texas Tech, the team that we haven't played before, and I don't know how long, or either it's the first meeting. But usually the mindset is usually, hey, let's get school out of the way, you know, a good week of school out of the way, and then this whole week, the second week of school, we sit here and work on our game plan, you know, get all our school stuff out of the way, and then we are all also sit here and be like, okay, Thursday's here. Now let's get ready for this game on Saturday.
Was it beneficial, like, when school would start a week before your season as opposed to starting the same week as the season?
Well, it's beneficial to actually start school first. So the freshmen can get their feet on the ground running, because we want them and other upperclassmen to get back into the school mode, to be able to say, hey, I can sit here and just football and also school work. So now that they have a week in school, yeah, it's not many classes that you have a lot of homework in or whatnot, but you understand now here's that load. You have to sit there and be able to get your food in, your workouts in, your school in, and now let's get to football around 2 o'clock to about 6 when you get ready to eat again and then homework again. So you have to be able to balance some things out, which I think is very beneficial for the freshmen and upperclassmen to get back into the mode of football, school season or whatnot, because all summer long you've been getting ready for this week and the rest of the season.
And just when you were a player too, obviously the things that are going on campus were things that were probably the least of your worries because you're focusing on the game. But when you see the enthusiasm, whether it be, you know, going to class and seeing a couple guys in the corner of the classroom talking about how they can't wait for Saturday, or you just walk around downtown, you see people getting pumped up talking about the first game of the season and all the excitement. This week there's Hawkapalooza and Fry Fest and all those things. Just what kind of goes through your mind? You see that enthusiasm that everyone's excited to see you out there performing.
Well, the biggest thing, the excitement about school and football, it's usually it comes from camp, you know. In camp, when I was playing in camp, we'd sit there and see some of the girls, sororities rushing and all this stuff while we're going to lunch and dinner and all this stuff. So we was getting excited about everything because we knew that football season, also school, is right around the corner. We want to see some hot girls and all that stuff and everything in class, and we see other guys, you know, sitting there talking about football. They talk about football. We talk about this all year long, you know. We look forward to this, and it's just one of those things, the excitement, and everybody saying, I'm going to the football game, you know, and you feeling like, yeah, we got the support right here. And the biggest thing, I think, with the excitement and the energy is that everyone want to see the actual James Vandenberg this year. That's the biggest thing, because everyone had a lot of hope into him when my senior year, when Rick had went down in a Northwestern game, they got a chance to see James, and James played well both games, well, all three games, Northwestern, Ohio State, and Minnesota. So I think with this year, it's a big difference, because you lose a lot of guys that a lot of people were used to over the last 3 years or so, but now it's a new coming. You know, you have Marcus Coker nowadays. You still have Marvin McNutt, still a leader. You have Micah High. You have Mike Daniels. I play with some of those guys, but it's a big excitement. I'm very excited because I don't know half of this team. So I'm really excited to know who are these guys? You know, these upperclassmen I know, but these younger, these underclassmen and younger guys are ready to roll. Will they bring the tradition back? You know, it wasn't no Fry Fest when I originally first got here. I think it was, what, 3 years old now or so? So it wasn't, we didn't see that buzz, you know. What we seen was Amy Iowa and all that stuff. So now it's a different excitement. I like it. Things got better over the years, but I'm really excited this year more than ever now that I've been gone 2 years.
And it's funny you bring up James, because that was actually one of the players I wanted to ask you about. And you mentioned when he came in for Rick your senior year. Just what did you see from him then, and maybe even, you know, the 2 years for that matter, because he redshirted your junior season. Just what did you see from him when you were teammates with him that you feel now you see him as a guy that can step right in and there won't be as much of a transition because of having a guy like Ricky for 3 years as the quarterback, and now you have a guy like James?
Well, from transition from Rick to James, it's not much difference. I think the biggest difference was just their personalities. You know, like I think I seen something. I'm not sure who. I don't want to misquote anyone. It said something about Rick being a skateboarder or something like that, and James being a hunter. And that's a pretty fair comparison. That I think it was Coach O'Keefe. I'm not sure if it was him, but that was a really good comparison. James is, I think he's a general. You know, he goes out there. When I was in practice, I used to see James being able to sit there and read his read through his progression. James was always a leader, you know. He was always talking to someone. James and Rick had a lot of leadership along themselves, you know, and usually your quarterback takes the lead, and I think he'd do a really good job. I like James. It's not just because he's one of my teammates, but he know what he's doing, and he studies his butt off. That's one thing I know. He always try to get better. He's a gunslinger, man. I can't wait to see this guy. I'm not sure what Tate did my senior year in high school before I got here, but this guy is going to throw like crazy. And don't be shocked if he averaged around 300 yards a game.
And then other player, and you mentioned him, is Micah Hyde. Granted, you were only teammates with him for 1 year, your senior year. He was a true freshman. But last year he filled in for Amari Spavey, started every game at right corner. Now he's moved to free safety. And my question for you is, a former defensive back, just how do the responsibilities in defensive scheme that Norm has set up, had set up for you guys and still has set up, how do the responsibilities change for him now that he moves from corner to free safety?
Well, I think the responsibilities change. It's just a slight change. You know, you go from being a corner where a safety is sitting there telling you what to do, either the free or the strong safety. With Micah, he needs to know pretty much the whole playbook now, exactly like a safety would. Completely, because a corner, the biggest thing you had to do was sit there and read your guy and the next guy there, or just read a couple progressions. Now, as a safety, you have to be the quarterback on the defense. Micah, I think he was the right guy to have back there, to move back there, just to get some more experience out there on the field at corner. At the safety position is where Coach take a lot of pride to put his smartest guys and his hardest players back there. With Sean being on the other side, they pretty much had it locked down a corner, but they want to keep the youth, I see, and on the field. You know, usually a junior and a couple younger guys or so, but now this is a whole new defensive backfield outside of Sean and Micah. So Micah has a chance to sit there and be able to play free safety, and I'm sure his brother Marcus Hyde had helped him adjust to the safety position, who played for Michigan State the last 4 years or so. But I think Micah should be able to get the job done, and his responsibility is just to be a leader back there.
And then the other thing too is, with Micah moving to free safety, now opens up a spot for Greg Castillo to play at corner, and I know he's started the season opener the last couple of years.
Oh yeah, Greg Castillo, the guy, I like Greg. He's really good. He's really good when he plays back. He's not the most physical guy up front. He liked to play off, man off, and you'll probably see that a lot this season with Greg, but maybe he has sat there and said, hey, I'm going to go play some bump and run. You know, he wasn't the biggest guy when I played with him. He's probably like a buck buck 70 or something like that. But I really think, you know, now with his father playing with the defensive coordinator with the Eagles, had taught him a couple things here when he had a chance to or whatnot. But I think Greg Castillo will be fine this year. Now he's a junior and he's able to sit here and take care of some stuff and be able to get the reps. Also, it's a couple of younger guys. I'm sure you know their names. I think his name BJ Larley.
Yeah.
I like the kid. I really like the kid. I've seen him a couple times in practice. But hopefully everything should be okay because Greg's been there the last 4 years now, and he should be able to take care of business.
And last question I want to ask you about here. With Iowa playing a team like Tennessee Tech, and to answer an earlier question you had, this is their first meeting, but they're a team from the Ohio Valley Conference, the FCS. When you played schools similar to this before, guys like UNI, Maine, Florida International, although I guess they were FBS, Montana, your redshirt freshman season. Just how much harder mentally is it to prepare for a team like that as opposed to a team like a Michigan or Ohio State where you hear the name and immediately it grabs your attention?
Well, Tennessee Tech, I had actually had a high school teammate actually play for Tennessee Tech, but one thing about this, focusing on this opponent, it's always a good challenge, you know, at the beginning of your season, try to figure out where you were. I remember my senior season where we played UNI in that game, gave a lot of people heart attacks and stuff like that, people pulling strings out of their hair and everything. But the biggest thing I think with playing a team like this at the beginning of the season opposed to Oregon and who they're playing?
LSU.
It's one of those deals where you need to sit there and figure out what you got on your team, you know, what younger guys. You got a lot of mixture of guys on this team, and this team can be able to do anything, just like Kirk Herbstreit said. But one thing about Tennessee Tech, the coaches know they haven't played them, really, and they need to pay a lot of attention to these guys. Tennessee Tech, I know, over the last couple years, this coach they had, they have big, taller receivers. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing you'll probably realize that, and that's what one of my high school teammates were when he played there, a receiver. But I think the biggest thing for the guys is like, hey, let's get this done. And coach always say, hey, this is another Big Ten match. So don't sit here and let these guys fool you just because of their name.
And to that point, that was one thing that your former head coach was talking about in his press conference this week, the fact that they do return 21 starters along their offense and defense, including all 11 on the offensive side of the ball.
Oh, yeah. Experience is a big thing for a lot of teams, smaller teams like that, UNI and stuff like that. Well, they have the upper hand. They have the guys that sit there, they melting together. Now they're saying, hey, let's take this to the next level. With a game, this can be beneficial for both teams, you know. They sit there and see where they're at, you know. For Iowa, you sit here and be like, hey, are we able to sit here and impose our will on a team like this from the jump to say, hey, we got this. We're going to send you back home and be able to make you look and get ready for this next game you guys have. And also for a Tennessee Tech to sit here and be like, hey, we have 21 starters back. Let's see what we can get out of this. How will our season go? So it will help on both sides. And I think Tennessee Tech, with all that experience, might give them a little problem, but hopefully the Hawks take care of them.
Now I've picked your brain on some of that stuff. You want to move on to the games here?
Let's go.
All right. And just a reminder, too, for all of you out there, if you haven't already submitted your picks for the HawkeyeDrive.com Pick'em, you still have time. Deadline is Friday at 5 p.m. Central. List of 10 games. Chris and I are going to go over them right now. Feel free to see how you stack up against the two of us. So first game on the docket here that we got is Friday night. TCU plays at Baylor. TCU is ranked 14th in the country here in the preseason poll. Horned Frogs went undefeated last year, won the Rose Bowl over Wisconsin, lose Andy Dalton, lost Jeremy Curley, but they do bring back Tank Carter, who's the defensive MVP of that game, the linebacker. Baylor went to their first bowl game for the first time in like 16 years last season, got thumped by Illinois in the Texas Bowl, but they return a really electrifying quarterback in Robert Griffin III. How do you see this game going now?
Well, I think this game is going to be a close one for a bit because Robert Griffin III, he's been on the scene here for the last 3 years with tearing his ACL a couple years ago, but this kid will sit here and fight. He will have his team ready with another note, hopefully, this kid from Oregon that transferred to Baylor, if he's able to play, this might be a huge impact on his game. We never know. We don't really see Baylor a lot. We usually see TCU, but I think this is going to be a close one, and TCU pulls it off.
I agree. I think TCU, I give the Horned Frogs a slight edge here, but again, the fact that it's at Baylor, it's a game that's going to grab people's attention. Moving on here, we got Northwestern at Boston College Saturday morning. This is a real interesting game because Northwestern, they're kind of the dark horse in the Big Ten this year. They bring back 9 starters on offense, including Dan Persa, and assuming he's able to go. Boston College, they're always a team that, you know, averages about 6-7 wins. They're a regular bowl team out of the ACC. They did lose Montel Harris, though, as a running back. He had arthroscopic knee surgery earlier in August and was preseason ACC Offensive Player of the Year. I'm thinking Northwestern. I don't want to say it will break them if Northwestern loses, but if they win this game, I think it could set up real nice for them this season. And I do think the Wildcats are going to go in there and pull out a victory. What do you see?
I got 2 good friends as defensive backs. Both are seniors this year. One of my buddies, Jordan Maben, for Northwestern, and Donnie Fletcher plays for Boston College. I said, hey, I won't pick between these 2 games, but I'm sure they probably won't hear this podcast. But I would pick Northwestern. Dan Persa is what everyone's talking about. This guy, he blew his Achilles out after our game, and I just like their offense. They're a team that sit there and scrap. And Boston College haven't really been Boston College. They have been in the early 2000s before they lost their coach. But I'm going with Northwestern. They win by 14, actually.
All right. And then got Western Michigan going into the Big House. It's Brady Hoke's debut as Michigan's new head coach. Western Michigan, I was just reading up on them before we got together, and they actually won the last 3 games, finished 6-6. They didn't go to a bowl, but they ended last season on a strong note, and they played Michigan closer a couple years ago. Michigan, on the other hand, we know what they have there with Denard Robinson at quarterback. Different offense now with Brady Hoke as opposed to what they have at Rich Rodriguez. But I think this is one of those games that Michigan, they know better than to look past a team like Western Michigan. I think the Wolverines get it done. It sets up a game next week against Notre Dame that's going to be big.
Well, I think this Western Michigan team, I think they will be ready to come into the Big House to play well. You know, it's a lot of teams that have been able to go to the Big House and play well early and just collapse at the end. But the biggest thing is that Michigan, we need to figure out what they're going to do here this year with this I formation. We see that Brady Hoke want to sit here and impose this will on guys with the power I. We want to see what Denard Robertson does this year, but I think he will struggle this first game, but Michigan wins. I think he will struggle this game just to get a different look outside of guys on his team. So let's look forward to this Michigan and Notre Dame game, but I think Michigan will struggle but win against Western Michigan.
Speaking of Notre Dame, the next game on our list here, they host South Florida. The Irish are ranked 16th in the country entering this season. And both teams ended last season strong. Notre Dame crushed Miami in the Sun Bowl, and South Florida was able to get a win over Clemson in what was called the Meineke Car Care Bowl. South Florida, to me, is a dangerous team. I think they're a team in the Big East to just look out for, especially when you consider the quarterback they have in B.J. Daniels. But with that being said, the reason I'm picking Notre Dame here is simply because of Michael Floyd and the fact that he was reinstated. I think he makes a huge difference in their offense. And I think Dan Chris coming back from his ACL injury, I think he's going to bounce back and have a big season for Notre Dame. And I just like Michigan, I think Notre Dame wins and it sets up a big game next week.
Well, I thought this was one of the 2 tougher games that I've seen here on this week's for me to sit here and pick a upset. Well, I'm going to go with the upset this year with this game, with USF, because I think Daniels will get the job done. They have the coach. The coach got himself established last year. These USF has been the underdog. They know they're not the underdog, and they're just going to take the underdog role and just go with it just because they know – they have to go out there and compete this year with West Virginia. Everyone's sitting there writing them off and saying, hey, West Virginia got this, you know, with their new offense. They're already – it's very similar to what they had with Coach Rich Rod, but more of a faster pace. But USF going to take care of Notre Dame, I really feel, just because Notre Dame need to get their quarterback situation together.
And it's funny that you mentioned USF's head coach, which is Skip Holtz. I'm going to be interested to see if this is one of the few times Lou Holtz actually picks against Notre Dame when they talk about the game on ESPN. Minnesota goes to USC. The Trojans are ranked 25th in the country. They can't go to a bowl again this season. They still have a postseason ban. And they met last season up in Minneapolis. USC was able to get out of there with a double-digit win. I don't see it being much different here because Matt Barkley really – really good quarterback, and I do think Minnesota will eventually become a better team under Jerry Kill than it was under Tim Brewster, but I mean, this is a tough way to open a new regime.
Oh yeah, I think this is a really tough game for Minnesota. I think Minnesota might end up still being at the bottom of the Big Ten, but the biggest thing, USC is at home. USC take care of business when they're at home, and I really think they're going to take care of Minnesota. Minnesota has an electric quarterback in Marquise Gray, as we know, but we haven't seen him really play a couple games under center. Minnesota also has a good receiver coming back, but that's it. That's all that I know, and I know they have a running back. So I think USC take care of them and take care of them handily. I think Matt Barkley end up passing for about 400 yards this year.
And then, or 4,000, you mean?
400 yards this game.
400 yards this game. All right. Just wanted to clear that up. Next game, and for whatever reason, it's not being televised here in the state of Iowa, but it's Northern Iowa, Iowa State. Obviously, you're familiar with both teams, having played them in your career. They played last year, and Iowa State was able to win. I think the Cyclones get it done. I'm not going to sit here and say I know a whole lot about you and I, but I just look at this. This is probably one of the few opportunities where you could actually, if you look at Iowa State's schedule and say, yeah, they have a realistic chance of winning this game, because it's tough. After this, they play Iowa, and then they go to UConn, and then they open up Big 12 play where they're going to be playing everybody in the conference.
Right.
So this is a big opportunity here for Iowa State to at least get off to a good start, and especially with a new quarterback and Steele Jantz.
Yeah. I was getting ready to say one thing with you and I think, what, 2 or 3 years ago, you and I beat Iowa State?
Yeah, they did beat them. I can't remember exactly when it was, but they did beat them.
I know they beat them when I was still here in school. I'm not sure what year it was, but I really think you and I has a really good chance, but I think that Iowa State will sit there and take care of UNI, just because Paul Rhodes, a guy that recruited me out of high school to go to Pittsburgh, I think he's really starting to get a handle of his program. Yes, Iowa State is in the Big 12 playing against heavyweights week in and week out, but I really think Iowa State will be able to get the job done just because they went to a bowl game, and I think they won last year.
Oh, it was 2 years ago they beat Minnesota in the Insight Bowl, and then Iowa obviously won the Insight Bowl this past year.
Right. So I really think Paul Groves got this team where he wants to go, but it's still tough in the Big 12. I take Iowa State over UNI.
Now there's a couple big games Saturday night, both at neutral sites. Well, I guess this one isn't really neutral, but number 5 Boise State takes on number 19 Georgia down in Atlanta. It's not a home game for Georgia, but it technically it is, because it's only about 70 miles from Athens. Boise State, we all know what they're capable of. They were literally a field goal away from going undefeated last season for a second year in a row. The one thing I'm going to say, though, is – you look back at the last few years and all the success Boise State's had, the one thing that you don't see is a win over an SEC team. And I do think that I'm going to buy into this whole notion of the SEC this time around, mainly because I don't know if Boise State's gone up against a team that's going to have the talent that Georgia has. Georgia might not be the best team in the conference, but they're going to have more talent than some of the teams that Boise State has played over the years and beaten, outside of maybe Virginia Tech last year and then Oklahoma when they won that Fiesta Bowl. With that being said, I actually think Georgia gets the job done Saturday night down in Atlanta.
Well, I agree with you with this one. I really think that Georgia will sit here and take care of business just because Georgia has been able to bring in those kids, those recruits, year in and year out. They just – Mark Richt really haven't had a season that he wanted to have in the past couple years since when they played Hawaii in the Sugar Bowl. And I really think Mark Richt is his coaching job is on the line this year.
Yeah.
And
absolutely,
his guys will sit here and take care of business because I'm sure they love Mark Richt. The guys sit there and get enough wins every year, but it's not good enough in Atlanta, you know. Well, not Atlanta, but in Georgia, you know, because we've seen the LSUs win a national championship. We've seen last year with Auburn winning a national championship in Alabama. Also, so what Mark Richt is saying, hey, I need to take this to the next step, and I'm sure their athletic director been looking at this game also like, hey, let's see what this guy is all about. I really think they will sit there and take care of a very talented team in Boise State with hands down with a very, very nice quarterback and a core guys coming back this year.
And then the big game Saturday night, number 3 Oregon, number 4 LSU, they're meeting down at Cherry World in Arlington. And I actually, this is a true stat that I heard a couple weeks ago. This is the first time since 1984 that two top five teams have opened a season against each other. That year, Miami was coming off a national championship, played an Auburn team that had Bo Jackson. Mm-hmm. And just to put this into perspective, neither one of us was alive in 1984. So, but yeah, Oregon, obviously, coming off a loss in the national championship last year, but they do bring back Darren Thomas and LaMichael James. LSU, we know about the situation there, Jordan Jefferson being suspended, as well as Russell Shepard, the wide receiver. Here's the one thing, though, and this is why I'm going to go with LSU, and it's because of the fact that even though Jarrett Lee is now the quarterback, it's about LSU's defense to me. And you saw what Auburn was able to do defensively, slowing down Oregon's offense. I think you're going to see something similar here with LSU's defensive line, being able to at least keep them in check and force Darren Thomas to win the game with his arm. And which, I mean, he's definitely capable of, but it's one of those things. He's going to run if he has a chance, as is LaMichael James. I think it's going to come down to LSU's defense getting the job done, plus the fact that when you look at the situation offensively, even though LSU is going to be without Jefferson and Russell Shepard, Oregon doesn't have Cliff Harris, and he's probably the best defensive player they got. So that being said, I like LSU, and I'll also throw in there the fact that they played in this stadium in a bowl game at night against Texas A&M last year and won that game convincingly. So the coaching staff, they're going to know the environment. They're going to know how to prepare for playing in a game in that stadium.
Right. I was getting ready to say one more thing. Oregon doesn't have his Jarrett Mayo, which was a phenomenal receiver. Let's not forget that he was on a kickoff team.
Yeah.
As a starting receiver. So that says a lot that Oregon's losing. But I'm going to go against you on this one. I'm going to go with Oregon. And the reason why I'm going to go with Oregon is that they're hungry and they're humble about what's going on here, what they have in the step ahead of them. They're playing in Jerry's World, and that's a big stage. And Jerry Jones love big games, and I'm sure he'll have a big game year in and year out at the stadium. But I really think the question is, like you said, with – LSU is their defense. Their defense is always good year in and year out. I really think Jarrett Lee will sit there and be able to step in because he has had a chance to start quite a bit of games in his career as a young guy, you know, and sat down and played not much and sparingly over the last couple of years. So I really think the biggest deal is stopping Oregon's offense with anyone. If you ask anyone, that Oregon offense is probably one of the harder offenses to stop just because of the pace. They can go either fast or slow. But I really think with the biggest matchup is in the trenches, like you say, LSU's defensive line versus Oregon's offensive line. Will Oregon offensive line be able to sit there and take that beating with the rotation of guys I'm sure LSU have? So I'm taking Oregon in a close game, but at the same time, I would not be shocked if Oregon be able to sit there and go go for the jugular. And LSU can also do it too once they sit there and impose their will on them. So it can go either way, but I'm going to go with Oregon.
And one other thing I would say too is if Oregon is able to win this game, sets up real nice for them, because really they don't play Stanford or USC until November. They could very well, if the Ducks take care of business Saturday night, they could very well be undefeated late into the season going into the final weeks, and they're going to definitely be in the conversation for a national championship. Then you got the game Monday night that is really, to me, intriguing. Miami playing Maryland. To me, it was intriguing even before the whole situation in Miami, which now they've said that 8 players are going to be suspended for sure, 2 of them being Ja'Cory Harris and Spence, a defensive lineman. But what intrigues me about this game is the fact that Miami has a new head coach in Al Golden, and Maryland has a new head coach in Randy Edsall, who decided to leave UConn after taking them to the Fiesta Bowl last year, is now the head coach of the Terrapins. It's going to be interesting to see the contrasts and styles, what they're both going to bring to these programs. I'm going to say Miami wins, because even with the suspensions, I think there's just a little bit more talent there on the Hurricanes roster than there is on the Terrapins roster. But that's not to say Maryland won't be a good team this season. I just think this is one of those games where all the eyes are going to be focused on Miami, and I do think they're going to win this game for Al Golden.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I was going to say you left out one more starter, Ray Armstrong, which was a phenomenal high school kid I followed. It's sad to see that things like this happen in a college game or whatnot. But the biggest thing with both teams is that we know who Miami is. We know Miami get the best of the best kids. It's just that we're trying to figure out, can these kids play together? And especially with this suspension, this should bring the kids together and say, hey, let's get this job done. Let's get past this game on Monday, which I think is a very interesting game on Monday. I would think, since the Bowling Bowl is gone and other mainstream games, but I was wondering, like, why is Miami Maryland so intriguing on Memorial Day? So
Labor Day, yeah.
Well, yeah, Labor Day. So I'm sitting here like, okay, well, we'll see, and maybe this will be a surprise and a great game for us Monday, which we'll have some Monday football, Monday night football on ESPN next the week after. So,
and then finally we'll focus on Saturday's game, Iowa playing Tennessee Tech. It is an 11 a.m. kickoff. If you can't make it to the game, it's on Big Ten Network. I'm not going to ask you to pick, unless you want to. I mean, I don't think anyone's going to pick against Iowa here in this game. But what I will ask you here is just what you feel the Hawkeyes need to do on Saturday just to make sure that it doesn't become a nail biter like what you experienced your senior season playing UNI.
Well, I was going to say the keys of the game this week is basically, as we all know, is to get our feet wet. That's the biggest thing, to get out there, get these younger guys playing in front of these 70,000 fans each and every week or so. I just think getting their feet wet, one. Also, two, being able to sit there and be able to get the style of play that Tennessee Tech has. And also, I would just say another thing is to get out there and figure out who you are as a player and impose your will towards the end of the game. I think Iowa will be able to sit there and pull out a couple things. We'll see some stuff that we probably haven't seen, or see a lot of vanilla stuff, as a lot of people say, with Coach O'Keefe. Just trying to figure out what works and what doesn't work in the first game going into the next game. But I'm getting ready to say is that Iowa should be able to take care of this team and hopefully put them away in the first half to figure out, hey, these guys that's on the second and maybe third string that be able to play, let's get them out there. Let's see how much depth we have. And I think hopefully we have a strong defensive line. I would love to see this defensive line this year with the LeBron Daniels coming off the end. I'd like to see Steve Bigak, Carl Davis, those guys I want to see actually this year. The linebacking core, I think, are fine. A lot of people say, hey, we need to worry. I think James Morris will take care of business. Bruce Davis has been here for a long time. Nielsen has been here. It's just the wheel linebacker. If they need to move Bruce, he has a lot of experience playing the Will linebacker in practice. I know practice is not a game, but Bruce should be able to take care of it. Bruce been a hungry guy, I know, back from back home in Cleveland, Ohio, and then a defensive backs. You know, Phil Parker will have those guys rally. That's one thing we don't have to worry about. The only thing is about is just making plays. And I want to see Sean Prater bring one and take it back to the house.
Do you want to give a score? You can if you want.
Score? I don't know no score. It's just one of those deals, you know. It can be a close one with a younger team, you know, a team that we don't really know, with some question marks here and there. But I don't think this team has a lot of question marks. It's just, hey, can I put a score on this game? Like, when we played Maine, I was like, oh, this is going to be a tough one, you know, just because we're just trying to fill in some more starters that we lost the year before with Mitch King and everyone. But we end up throttling those guys towards the end of the game. But I would say it's probably a 21-point game, unless Coach Ferentz just say, hey, let's take it easy and get these younger guys in and figure out what they're all about.
I do agree that this is one of those games they're going to want to see what they got in some of the younger players. But as you said, it's a matter of how the game is dictated. Carl Davis actually isn't going to be able to play this week, so he won't get that chance. But Ferentz is saying during his press conference he hopes that he'll be back next week for their game at Iowa State. I think to me, and it's not even just this game, but it's also early in the season, I think what I would suggest people look for is they're going to focus a lot on getting Marcus Coker carries early on. Maybe he doesn't have a whole ton of carries Saturday, but I think the early part of the season, they're going to be hinging on him to be a big part, especially when you consider the performance he had in the Insight Bowl. And then throw in there, too, the situation of fullback right now. We don't know when Brad Rogers is going to be back. And I wouldn't be surprised if you see multiple tight ends being used, or you have Brad Herman and CJ Fedorowicz being out there on a regular basis, maybe even Zach Derby. They go three tight ends. I'll say Iowa wins this game 30-6. And I know it's amazing because Tennessee Tech, obviously, they bring back a lot of experience, but I just feel like this is one of those games where they're going to go up against Iowa's defense, and their coach even mentioned the physicality and the strength that Iowa has, particularly on the defensive side of the ball. This is one of those games where I could see Mike Daniels and Broderick Benz, they just blow guys up early on, and it might just be a little overwhelming there. And then if Vandenberg is able to get a connection going, whether it's with McNutt or Keenan Davis, Iowa has a chance. I think the key, obviously, is the fact that they got to jump out early on this team. You can't let a team like Tennessee Tech hang around considering the experience they have. But I'll say for this game, I'll say Iowa wins pretty comfortably. I'll go with the 30-6 final score. Just a reminder to everybody out there, if you want to become a subscriber to HawkeyeDrive.com, you can. We offer a 3-day free trial. Also have monthly subscription for $9.99 a month, yearly subscription for $89.99 a year. Gives you access to all premium content on the site, as in addition to the free stuff like this that is provided. Chris, thank you very much again for taking time to be a part of this. And as I said before, we're really excited to have you be a part of this over the course of the season. I think everybody's going to enjoy hearing your insight each week.
Oh, thank you, man. I appreciate the opportunity, like I said, with you. It's going to be a good season. I feel it's going to be a good season that people have been sitting here looking for football to come around, you know, with the NFL lockout. But it's college football season, as we all know. It's a Hawkeye state. It always will be a Hawkeye state, and go Hawks.
And for former Iowa defensive back Chris Rao, Susan Dang from the Burlington Hawkeye, and Thomas Corhern from the Cookeville Herald Citizen down in Tennessee, I'm Brendan Stiles. We'll be back again next Thursday to recap Iowa's game against Tennessee Tech and look ahead to next week's game at Iowa State. This is Brendan Stiles signing off.